Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Thank you for joining the Empowerment Zone. I am your host, Ramona Houston. Dave Ramsey has a 7-step financial plan, and we have already had an episode talking about the first 3 steps of his financial plan. And today we're going to have part 2. And we're talking about Dave Ramsey's financial plan. Does it really work for us? This is all about Black economics. And today our guest is Mr. Brian Jennings, which you all know so well. So we're happy to have you, Brian. Let's get right on it. Can you give us a brief recap for those who didn't hear your first episode about what Dave Ramsey's 7-step financial plan is, a brief review of the first 3 that we've already covered, and let's go right into the steps 4 through 7.
Okay, great. Well, let's go ahead and briefly go over what Dave Ramsey's plan is. There's 7 steps. These 7 steps are, number 1 is to save $1,000 for emergency fund. Get started on your emergency fund, because most Americans, if a $500 expense comes up, you know, about half of us can't cover that expense, or American household. So the first step is to save $1,000 and start that emergency fund to fall back on. The second step is to pay off all your debts, except for your house. So you work on your high interest debts, your credit cards, you pay those down, you pay down student loans, and eventually you're gonna get to your mortgage, you're gonna get to your auto loan from the highest interest to lowest interest, you're gonna pay those down. The third step is to save 3 to 6 months of expenses. Number 4 in Dave Ramsey's plan is to invest 15% of your income into the stock market 401k, some employer-sponsored investment plan. Number 6, save for retirement, pay off your home early, step 6. Step 7 is build wealth and give. Step 5 is save for your children's college fund. And then number 6 is pay off your home early. 7, wealth and giving. Okay, so in the first segment, we talked about how this plan sounds good in theory, but in practice, when we see what's going on in the American economy, we see how generational wealth is growing for Americans in general, particularly Black and Brown people. We see that we're not in the best of position for success. When you look at the last 11 years after the last recession, we've had unprecedented amounts of growth and domestic growth production, or GDP. But at the same time, we also see that the amount of loans, consumer debt, is just skyrocketing over the same 11 years. So we live in a country where we're the wealthiest country in the world. There are economic gaps, there's inequality gaps within our economic system, because we're the wealthiest country, we're growing in wealth, but then at the same time, we're growing in debt. We know that 90% of the wealth in America is captured by the top 10%. And we're going to get into furthermore why this plan doesn't help change that. And also, you know, we'll talk about our culture and how that hinders us as well, and how Americans believe and how we treat money. So let's kind of jump into kind of our belief systems as one culprit. So we can't entirely say our belief system is a culprit 100%, but then also we do have to talk about the government, how they play a role in our lack of financial success or lack of generational wealth building. One aspect we talked about a little bit, and we won't jump much on it, but one aspect is that American corporations don't pay people very well. So it is hard to accumulate wealth for the middle class and lower middle class and to move up the economic ladder if the corporations and employers do not pay well. The other aspect of wealth building in America is that we have a sense of entitlement in the way in which we assume or we arrive at being successful is flawed. Okay, so in America, it's all about shopping, having nice material things, going to Europe. Oh, great, I had this wonderful vacation. I went to Disneyland and I'm enjoying my life. You know, you have your home and the dog and the picket fence, the American dream. So we are sold an American dream. And what happens is as we pursue the American dream, we say, oh, we are debt free. Oh my God, I am free. Oh my God, no, you're not. You're still dependent on the system. So that's some of the problems we're going to be tackling today, going through the remaining steps of the Dave Ramsey plan.
This sounds good. Now, when you talk about, are you saying that it's a problem being consumers, or are you saying it's, I kind of want you to expand on what the issue is when you talked about the American dream, that are we chasing just material things, or what are you challenging? Right. What are you challenging?
Okay, so in the pursuit of arriving at the American dream, there's a couple things that you do, or we do as Americans. One, we make other people wealthy in our pursuit of the American dream and say, oh, we're financially free, or we're financially solvent, or we're in a good financial position. That's a belief system that's passed on to us. For example, we just passed Black Friday and then we passed Christmas holiday, two holidays, right? So people go, and this blows my mind, people go and shop at Walmart for Christmas. Black Friday comes, people rush in the doors. They buy everything on the shelf and they rush out because they're getting a great deal. They get a rush out of it. They're excited. It's fun. And you give gifts to your friends, your family, and your children, and this is the life. But at the same time, the second that you go into Walmart and buy all those items, you're also suppressing your neighbor. You go and support a corporation that doesn't pay people. Like, that is backwards. You shouldn't go in there. So again, let's just say our pursuit of material things. So the way we express our arrival, like our love for one another, is I'm gonna go buy you something. I'm gonna buy my mom something for Christmas, my dad something, my kids something, my sister and my brother, and it stretches us financially. So where our priorities are backwards in the sense that we're focused on spending what we do have, the $1 we earn, we take that $1 and we go spend it on happiness and things that give us joy, temporary joy, which it's okay to a little bit, but what happens is what is sacrificed is your savings, how much money you're going to have in retirement, because you're chasing things.
Understood. Okay? Understood.
Right.
Thanks for expanding upon that. So let's move on to 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Sure. Okay. So step number 4 is good that you're investing for your retirement.
For our audience, tell us what step number 4 is. So
okay, step number 4 is investing 15% of your income into a retirement plan.
Okay.
Okay. So that's good because you're accumulating wealth. The bad things that come about investing, let's just say I need $1 million to retire. And I'm going to break that up into $50,000 over the course of 20 years. That's good, right? People can live off that in retirement. Your house is paid off. Great. You have less expenses. You can take care of yourself. You can live the lifestyle that you want on $50,000. The problem is that the myth that's involved in that is that life does not go that way, especially in retirement. We're going to get into what's called the sequence of returns. So no matter how much money you have, let's say, for example, $1 million, you have $1 million in the bank at the time of retirement, age 65, you plan on being dead by 85, okay? So if the economy is not doing well when you retire, in the first 2 years or the first 3 years, you're not gonna make it. You're going to be in a position where you're gonna draw money out of your retirement. Let's say you draw $50,000 out of your retirement account the first year. So you have, well, first off, let me say this. No, I'll say it this way. If you have $1 million and you retire and the economy is bad, you lose 10% that first year. Before you even touch your money, you have $900,000 left remaining to live on for 20 years before you even touch it because you lost 10%. You're going to draw off $50,000. So you're going to be at $850,000 your first year of retirement before you do anything. Year two, if you do the same thing and you lose money again, you're going to be at $765,000 just right there. I mean, the start of the second year of retirement. Okay, so we as Americans should think about a plan that is solvent. Okay, we have to think of ways in which we can secure our financial future. Just saying, hey, I'm going to invest in my 401k and I'm going to get to 65. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. There's a lot of things you have to account for. Okay. So in order to be successful in retirement, you have to have money and a source of income outside of retirement. You have to. And I'm not talking about Social Security because that may not even be around in the future. So if by the time you get to retirement, you have to have something else. You can't completely depend on a system to work for you.
That's good. That's good. That's great advice to have additional resources available at retirement and to not just depend on your retirement as your sole source of income. Okay, so let's move on to step number five, save for your children's college fund. What do you think about that?
Well, I think we get into some trouble here is that we need to change our mindset on how we're saving for our children's future. Yes, in and of itself, getting a 529, making monthly contributions.
420, isn't 420?
529? 429. 529. So this is what we do. I can't stand it because there was a period where my wife would say, all right, we got to go to kids' birthday parties. And every other week there was a kid's birthday party. Right? it was bad because we got kids in my family, kids in my wife's family, kids at church, kids at school. Oh, it's pretty bad. I just didn't have any rest on the weekend. So I told my wife, I was like, look, I'm not going to all these. You know, you're going to be the sole representative at those events if you want to. But every single event, oh, guess what I'm going to go do? I'm going to go buy a card and write my name in it and give it to the parent and then stick a gift card in there or go buy a toy for a kid I don't particularly know very well or don't particularly like, but I'm going to go do it. Right. And so why am I going to go run across town, spend my weekend and go buy some paper, which is going in the trash? That's not going to be recycled. It's a waste of resources. The kids don't even ever look at cards. Mm-hmm. I open up a card and there's $5 in there. Hey, boom, I'm happy. That card is gone. All you care was about the gift card or the $5, $10, $20 you got as a kid. That's all you're going to remember. Right. Mm-hmm. So why keep doing that? Mm-hmm. Why is it that when we go places, we feel like we have to give something? That is a conditioning it's social pressure. That's what I call it.
So what do you propose then?
So this is what we do because kids always have enough toys. Their parents buy them enough toys. You don't need to buy kids toys. Don't do it. So the saying says it takes a village to raise a child. In the Black and Brown community, for economic development, it takes a village, or all communities, really, doesn't matter. It takes a village to raise a child, to get a child somewhere. And if you want your kids to be better off than where you are, you have to make economic moves to better that child, right? So instead of the gift, how about you say, hey, all right, everyone, we're going to get together. You're going to write a check, $25 minimum, $50. Okay. And we're going to, at some point during the party, we're going to take all the checks and put them in the pot. And we're going to say, hey, we're investing in your future, you know, little Timmy, little Johnny or Susie, whomever, right? We're going to set this money aside into your college fund so that you can be successful. So you have the resources you need to go into a college program or attend trade school of some kind. It needs to stop being the gifts.
I love that idea. And, you know, that can go to all our padrinos y padrinas who are out there supporting quinceañeras and other events. Sure. Hey, let's take some of that money and put it towards a college fund. And if we start, as you know, we have birthday parties very early, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If we start this tradition early, it's incredible what could happen by the time they're ready to go to college, because this college fund is continuing to build. So we need to create new traditions in our families, instead of buying toys, instead of doing this and that, which is also fleeting, we can give to the college fund. Thank you so much for that, Brian. That idea. So let's go. Right. Oh, do you want to say something else about
that? So I'm going to say something else that just popped up in my head. So I spoke with a couple of mentors, you know, in the past, and one of them, I was in financial services as an advisor at some point. And, you know, I was meeting with a new mentor. He wanted me to come work with him. And I said, well, why do you want to work with people who are economically disadvantaged? And he goes, well, you know what? I got tired of working with millionaires and billionaires. Crazy. I've never heard that before. He said, you got tired of it? And he says, yeah, this is not fulfilling. It's not rewarding. So again, for our holiday traditions, we need to do a lot of different things. One of them, you know, I recommend for Christmas, go feed the homeless or go volunteer to help the homeless get off of the street or into a home, right? How about you go build a small home? How about you go help people economically who are in poverty to get out of it? That should be the gift that you give for Christmas. You take your whole family and you guys do that together. I mean, forget the gifts.
That's a great idea, because those types of gifts of helping others have much more longevity, and it's not so fleeting as, you know, giving the little gifts we get for Christmas. Great ideas. So we need to change some traditions in our community. So let's move on to let's move on to Dave Ramsey's step number 6, which is pay off your home early. Now, earlier you said you should be paying off everything else but your home. But on here, Dave Ramsey says pay off your home early. So what does that work for us?
No, you don't accelerate paying off debt. Credit card debt, yes. You don't accelerate paying off debt because you're going to need that money that you decided I'm going to give back to a bank so they can go multiply the money. You need that money. Don't accelerate paying off a debt. That includes your house. Just get the 30-year mortgage instead of the 15, because the paying it off early only saves you, if it's a $300,000 home, it's only going to save you about $115,000 in interest over the course of 15 years. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, so if you're paying an extra $600 a month over the course of 15 years, you could use that money somewhere else, because you're going to need it in retirement. You have to start thinking about building for your retirement, because what is $600? With $600 a month for 15 years, there are other opportunities that are going to gain you wealth, right? A mortgage is a 4% debt. Like, why are you going to double down on 4% debt? It's not going to make or break you there, right? So if you did the money that you did on the 30-year mortgage, because you save $600 a month, move that somewhere else. Start being a Shark Tank. right? Start investing in other businesses, because you can't just do the 401k and sit back passively. The 401k, again, you're buying shares in hundreds of different companies on the stock market. So you're spreading your risk around, because, hey, I got all this ownership in a bunch of different companies. So if one particular company fails, you know, I got 99 that are doing well, right? That's part of the stock market. But again, we need to take that risk as Black and Latino people, take the risk of investing directly with other companies. Okay. And doing it yourself. So that, but what I mean by doing it yourself is you go reach out to a small business. So if you don't know any directly that you can invest in, it's okay. Get a business broker. Business brokers deal with buying and selling businesses all the time. That's what they do. They facilitate those transactions between two parties or groups of people, right? So you can say, hey, I want to be a part of ownership, minority ownership of a company. I'm just passive. I just want to invest. I just want to return. Great. There are tons of people that take your money. So even if you can make some arrangements, hey, I have $600. Instead of paying off my home early, I can take the $600 over the next 15 years and invest it in a profit sharing agreement with a business. You can do local business. You can do, you know, regional businesses, the return is greater. So if you go and do it yourself, you get a bigger piece of the pie. You get a bigger piece of ownership, right? So if you spread your risk over hundreds of companies in the stock market, you're not in touch with those companies. You know, you don't know anything about those people.
Yep.
You don't even know who they are. This, and in this way, if you get involved yourself directly, you know exactly who you're working with, right?
That's great, great advice. Instead of doubling up on your mortgage and trying to pay your home off early, maybe you should take those extra funds and invest. And right. One of the ways of investing is not necessarily just in the stock market, but invest in your local businesses.
Exactly, exactly. And then too, the same dollar that you're going to say, we talked about this before, spending $50,000, or excuse me, not spending, paying off $50,000 of student loan in like 2 years, 3 years. Oh, look at me. I paid off all this money. I'm like, that is not a smart financial move. You don't, because a $50,000 investment can turn into $650,000 in 8 years, right? I'm already in touch with organizations because I do this myself. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. I already do it now. Mm-hmm. If I had $50,000, I know someone right now, I can get that into $650,000 in 8 years.
That's it.
Easy, hands down, hands down.
So go ahead.
There's a lot of industries you can do it with. So another example, because you asked me before in the previous interview, what should we be doing instead of accelerating paying off debt? You can look into BBnomics. It's a Black crowdfunding platform. You can do Black crowdfunding. You can do community investing, where you have access to a group of businesses within a community. And here's another one. I'll leave you with this gem as well in terms of investing. The oil and gas, the fossil fuel industry, it already reaches peak. Not in America, but in Europe, because banks are slowly shifting who they lend money to. They're shifting away from the fossil fuels to the green energy sector.
Right.
So it's coming. So you might as well get on the bandwagon now. So when we have the next Democratic president coming on board, that whole Paris Climate Agreement, reducing emissions, it's good to jump on now. Go find a company that's installing solar panels. Yep. And once they get some more funding, you can invest in that company. And there you go. People are going to be getting solar panels on their homes left and right. Just say, hey, you know what? I'll fund your marketing. I will fund your marketing for the next 15 years. You just give me 1% of your revenue per month or something, whatever arrangement you want to make. That company is going to be solvent. Solar is the next wave.
That's it. That's it. Great advice. So last step, for the last few minutes, we have step number 7, build wealth and give.
Okay. So Here's another myth about whole life insurance, which Dave Ramsey does not support. I'll spend a little time talking about this. So half of America, about 54% of Americans have life insurance. That's down from 79% of Americans used to have insurance, like back in the 1965.
Right.
About 79% of American household had life insurance. And we're just dwindling today. People don't get it, don't get life insurance. We definitely need to do it. You definitely need to have life insurance as a tool to lead generation wealth, right? So if you don't have it at the time of your death, you're likely not going to be leaving much behind, maybe a house. And I say maybe a house because more people that are retiring now are carrying more debt in retirement to help their help their children. Mm-hmm. So you need to have insurance longer. The whole buy term and invest the difference and be out of debt, that's not what's happening in our economy right now. Parents into their retirement are still helping their children that are 25 to 40.
Yep, that's true.
So if you're gone and you can't no longer help, you better have something there. Because again, a lot of our Black and brown communities, and by the way, I'll say this little gem here as well, Hispanic or Latin American groups are, you know, have the highest rate of uninsured, or they're the most uninsured group of all ethnic groups. African Americans are maybe around 10%. Hispanics around 20% underinsured or uninsured at all, and in total, Caucasians are about 7% uninsured. So they get insurance, and they get more of it, right? So, in order to give, you can't really give by paying down your 401k and dwindling that number down to zero, right? Because you're not leaving that behind. Dave Ramsey says to spend all that in your retirement, so you're just giving a house. That's really not. You could be giving much more.
Mm-hmm. You know, also, I think that, you know, when you talk about step seven, build wealth and give, I think giving should be a part of your process all along, that you should always be philanthropic. That is part of your social mission, whether you're giving to the church, whether you're giving to community organizations, or whether you start your own philanthropic foundation, you always need to be giving in service and also in kind as well as financially. I don't think that that's something that you should save until you feel like you have a lot of extra money. You should always be giving.
Sure. I mean, always be paying it forward.
Yeah.
So that we're bettering the next generation. So one of my employees right now, I'm actually helping get through college and, you know, planning, degree planning and looking at options. And as we, especially as minorities, to continue our movement toward a better future, we need to make sure that we're taking advantage, because as a minority or any minority group, you've been disadvantaged. So there are programs for us, especially professional schools, like go to college and then go to a professional school. There are professional schools to help us to continue to get into some of the industries where we just don't have a lot of representation, medical, you know, legal. There's a slew of industries and there's a slew of programs that we could be putting our kids into that help us bridge the gap in a lot of communities. I mean, one reason, and I'll say this in closing, one reason that we lack some of the financial wherewithal, one industry that we do need to encourage more of our Black and brown children to get into, is the financial service industry.
Agreed.
Black and brown people make up 30% of the population, but we only make up about 4% of the nation's financial advisors.
And so that's probably why your friend said he likes working with the community, because he's able to educate people on financial matters that and get some fulfillment from it that these groups had no awareness or knowledge of, or at least, let me not say no, none, but limited knowledge and awareness of. And so he's getting fulfillment out of working with the community as a financial advisor.
Absolutely, right. Because if you don't know, or you don't have access, it's limiting your economic power.
Correct. So that's one of the fields we need to encourage our young people, as well as adults who are looking for their second, third careers, is to go into financial services. So thank you so much, Brian. This was a great conversation, as always. Can't wait to hear what you're going to school us on next.
I look forward to that.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on the Empowerment Zone. You have a great day.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWORKS, digital support. And, of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts, too. Thank you for your continued support.